Radio Ranch in beautiful Sugar Land, Texas, where life truly is sweeter. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Friday, December the 29th, 2023. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
There yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. Hey, kids, you know what day it is? It's Hawaiian Shirt Friday. Let's do the Hawaiian Shirt Friday fight song. Sing it loud and proud. The only way to start the weekend, and truly the sweetest sound this side of heaven. Let's get things started with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. This is a good one. It says, those who talk don't know. Those who know don't talk. Whoa. That's right. And those who listen don't have to talk.
I request the cone of silence.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of the blogcast. Come on.
Twisted history.
It's big stuff.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Not all at once.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same. You need to know your twisted history.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
See? Although it hasn't happened yet. You never know, right? All right, kids, it was on this day in 1845 the United States annexed the Republic of Texas and admitted it as the 28th state. For the previous 9 years, it was its own country. And today, a good many Texans still think of it that way, myself included. And it was on this day in 1970 the Occupational Safety and Health Act was signed into law by President Nixon. Ever since, workers have been required to wear hard hats, reflective vests, protective clothing, masks, biohazard suits, earplugs, safety eyewear, and other protective devices. And people wonder why no one wants to work anymore.
I got a bad feeling about this.
You've no doubt seen the pro-Palestinian demonstrations going on all across the country, usually confined to college towns. But it's kind of frightening when you think about it. But there's an interesting article in the Daily Wire by Leif Le Mayhew, who is pretty well versed on the topic, says that educators are being urged to go against Israeli narratives and teach students to be pro-Palestinian activists. So Leif writes that radical activist groups are spreading the curriculum that trains kids, and we're talking about kids here, to be activists and hate America through classrooms across the country. And this is a record. This is actually according to a report from Parents Defending Education. PDE, it's a group aimed at taking politics out of the classroom. You probably have heard of them. Good organization. And in the just-released report, first shared with the Daily Wire, the education nonprofit highlights how two activist groups with links to the school districts across the country put together a critical media literacy toolkit to guide educators when discussing the war between Israel and Hamas. Now, the toolkit, created by the Coalition for Liberated Ethnic Studies. Let me repeat that. Coalition for Liberated Ethnic Studies. That's the CLES. And the Liberated Ethnic Studies Model Curriculum Consortium, the LAS-MCC, points educators to anti-American, pro-Palestinian, and anti-colonialist resources from a plethora of leftist organizations. Now, you would think this should be, or would be, against the law. But apparently not. Now, this toolkit is a recent thing. It was put out November 27th, and it says it's meant for teachers, families, and community organizers. Well, according to PDE researchers, there are at least 18 school districts and one state education agency that have links to CLES and the LAS-MCC, or individuals and groups affiliated with those organizations. Now, PDE researcher Ryan Staley told the Daily Wire that there could be more schools linked to the two groups, but that their materials would be making their way into the classroom. He said, "We don't know the extent of how many schools these people are working in at the moment, This will be used in schools if it's not already. The people behind it are not good actors. They vehemently hate the United States. And yet here we freely allow them onto the campuses, onto the school property, into the classrooms. We allow them to have access to the faculties, probably even the school boards. So let's dig into this a little more. The CLES is an organization built on the principle of critiquing empire and its relationship to white supremacy, racism, patriarchy, cis-heteropatriarchy, capitalism, ableism, anthropocentrism. Oh, God. How many of these darn names do they want to roll out here, huh? Anthropocentrism. And other forms of power and oppression at the intersections of our society. This crap doesn't belong in our schools. Certainly not primary schools. Not in school districts. This doesn't belong there. How about if we just focus on reading, writing, arithmetic, science, history? This is why I support the PDE. They're trying to get politics out of our schools, but it somehow keeps managing to get into our schools. If you want to understand why Democrats oppose school choice, this is why. Classic example of why Democrats oppose school choice. I'll tell you a little bit about the Texas legislature. We have a part-time government here in Texas. That's why Texas is so prosperous. Our legislature meets only every other year. And then for only 140 days, and that's it. You get your business done, you go home. But the governor can always recall the legislature into session. They call them special sessions. When there's a problem. And we've had a couple of special sessions already. Greg Abbott has been calling people back into Austin to tackle this problem of school choice. And it keeps getting defeated. Now, I say the Democrats are the reason we don't have school choice, but unfortunately, there are enough rhinos to derail school choice. But this right here, this is a classic example of why Democrats in particular, and rhinos, don't want school choice. They want our kids to be indoctrinated. So the CLES and the LESMCC toolkit starts by stating that the mainstream media is dominated by the Israeli narrative. Really? Have you watched CNN or MSNBC lately? So the toolkit says, as we watch and listen in horror, as an unimaginable catastrophe catapults forward in Gaza, we are grieving. This is both difficult and critical because the mainstream media, as well as our local, state, and national governments, are almost completely dominated by the Israeli narrative, and any mention of Palestine, liberation, anti-Zionism, occupation, or stopping the genocide is immediately marked as anti-Semitic. According to the toolkit, critical media literacy is supposed to focus on indigenous peoples, racially marginalized people, and voices rooted in solidarity and collective liberation moments. This is nuts. If you don't see this as the seeds of radical Islamic activity in our public schools, then you seriously need to pull your head out. Because that's what this is. These are the seeds of domestic terrorism. And let's not forget the fact that we have an open southern border. If you've been watching the news and you're sitting there shaking your head at all these people wearing these black and white checkerboard head wraps and are demonstrating on American streets in support of Palestine and against Israel, if you've been watching the rise of anti-Semitism in this country, here you go. This is how it's happening. This is why it's happening. And then you have people in the teachers' unions, people like Randy Weingarten, who I would label as, when it comes to education, she's public enemy, or should I say public school enemy number one. She is a dangerous person. What business does a president of a major, in fact, the largest labor union in the country, what business does she have going over to Ukraine? So as we go into the new year, and this is the last blogcast before the new year, as we go into this new year, I want you to be thinking about this. I don't think any of us can afford to stay comfortable in our homes and not get proactive about this. I mean, it's pretty much a foregone conclusion that the state of California has lost its collective mind. They did that a long time ago. I mean, they were already headed in that direction long before there was a Barack Obama. How they got there, I don't know. I think that would make for a very interesting anthropological study. California. But we have got to be vigilant. We have to be supremely vigilant to make sure that this stuff doesn't spread. And it will, because believe me, with all the discontent that we have in America's big cities these days, and there's a lot of it, discontent about crime, housing, the lousy economy, all of this brought on by not just one person, but primarily by one under the leadership of one person, Barack Obama. If you don't think Barack Obama's running the White House right now, you have not been paying attention. How could Joe Biden, especially as mentally deficient as he is now, how could a guy like Joe Biden follow the playbook of Barack Obama so closely? There've got to be daily meetings. You got to bank on that. And we're in trouble, my friend. Any idea where Joe Biden is? Well, you probably know now because it was back on Wednesday. He landed in the U.S. Virgin Islands for another free vacation at the house of affluent supporters, which is good. I mean, that's good for us. It means that he's not doing it on our tab. And I think there's a law, though, about the kind of gifts you can accept as a public servant. There were previous gifts that prompted condemnation from ethics watchdogs, including his refusal to record the generosity on annual declaration forms. But then why should he worry about that compared to the other stuff he's been doing, receiving millions upon millions upon millions of dollars from foreign entities to compromise the security of the country, and yet he still serves as our president? I mean, come on, go figure. 81 years old, he should know better, wouldn't you think? But now he's slated to spend 6 nights at Bill and Connie Neville's 3-bedroom oceanfront property on St. Croix, which is regularly available as a VRBO rental. First wife, Jill Biden, I'm sorry, that's Dr. Jill Biden, granddaughter Natalie, and maybe other members of the president's family will accompany him to the Verdant Villa, which has an in-ground pool, beautiful views of the Caribbean Sea, and an outlying island. Biden stayed at the same house over the New Year's holiday last year and didn't pay a dime, which of course infuriated the Nevilles because he'd given them tickets to his first day dinner as president the previous month, which featured a heavily curated list of about 300 billionaires, cultural icons, and politicians to welcome French President Emmanuel Macron. The Nevilles, who couldn't be reached for comment, had previously loaned the home to Biden, dating back to his vice presidency, and have highlighted the fact on property advertising. See, that's how that works. Yes. Joe Biden slept here. Wow. So a White House official told the New York Post, as they've done previously, the president and the first lady are staying at the home of their friends Bill and Connie Neville. They walked off Air Force One on Wednesday afternoon, accompanied by their 19-year-old granddaughter Natalie, the daughter of their late son Beau, and expect to stay until the new year. Well, the Two Palms Villa is completely booked until April 1st and features 3 bedrooms, 3 bathrooms, a dedicated workplace, an infinity pool. I think those things are so cool. A chef's kitchen and other facilities. This new commercial use of the president's name really defies the White House's position against that sort of thing. Echoing an earlier episode in which Biden's brother used his relationship with the president for a law business advertisement. I mean, they have no shame. None whatsoever. Bidens are living for free in a property that would normally rent for more than $6,000 on VRBO. Now, Biden's practice of taking free vacations and then failing to disclose them on annual ethics forms has drawn similarities to trips made by conservative Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas with real estate mogul Harlan Crow, remember that? Who had no known business before the court. And like Thomas, Biden has a lengthy history of taking free stays, but there are two key differences. Biden's host is rarely at home, and the president goes at government cost rather than his benefactors. So we are picking up the tab. Mark Paoletta, a longtime friend and defender of Clarence Thomas and the White House Budget Office's top lawyer under President Trump, said, Joe Biden has been staying for free at donors' homes for years and has never included these vacations on disclosure forms. These are not longtime friends, they're wealthy donors. So there's no excuse to not disclose. But because his name isn't Clarence Thomas, who visits his friends at their homes and doesn't have to report, the media don't care. They protect Biden and are only interested in one side. So when President Trump goes off on the media, your fake news, your corrupt media, he's right. Now, I'll give you a great example. CNN reported on the Biden's vacation, but never said a word in the form of criticism. So who's Neville? Well, Bill Neville is 61 years old. He's the creator of the Viking software firm here in the States, and they produce the ENPS news content platform, which is sold by the Associated Press. As Rush Limbaugh used to refer to the Associated Press, or the AP, the Associated Press Obama. Now, Bill and his wife, Connie, are both from Alabama, and they've given to both Republicans and Democrats, including Biden. Now, according to the Virgin Islands Economic Development Authority, 800 news outlets, including the BBC and ESPN, use Viking's software to easily search multimedia content. And then they simply adapt stories for digital publishing. And then they integrate that with digital and social media platforms. It's like an automatic search engine. So Biden's been at other expensive houses for free in the past, including a 7-day visit in August at the 9-bedroom Kiowa Island, South Carolina property of another donor, Maria Alwyn, whose family operates a hedge fund. First Lady Jill Biden, Dr. Jill Biden, had to remain longer because she had COVID. Now, the Nevilles, well-known Democratic contributors and IT sector veterans from Alabama, are believed to be worth $1 billion. And their generosity extends to charitable efforts, of course. Got to get those tax deductions, right? And one of them is fundraising for St. Croix's animal care organizations. Now, the Bidens have been visiting St. Croix practically every year since 2008. Notably, Biden visited the island frequently as vice president and was the first sitting president to do so since Bill Clinton's visit in the 1990s. And we'll continue to watch this. Going to track his whereabouts. See where he's going, what's he doing? He's not doing anything important, of course, because Barack Obama has everything under control. Before I leave you for the New Year's weekend, I wanted to give you something very encouraging. I want to talk about Tinian Airfield. Do you know where that is? The Northern Marianas Islands? Oh, it's an historic place. We had four runways on the northern tip of Tinian from where we launched B-29s for the final bombing campaign of Japan in the closing days of the war in 1945. This is also where both the Enola Gay and Boxcar, the two B-29s that carried atomic bombs to Japan to end the war, were launched from. Well, Tinian is now coming back to life after 70 years. Actually, more than 70 years. And it's a new dispersal airfield, or going to be very quickly, to deter China. Pacific Air Force's Commander General K. Ken Wilsbach is overseeing the rebirth of this huge facility. Right now, it's nothing. It's abandoned. In fact, three of the four runways are completely overgrown, but they can be quickly put back to use. Now, Tinian and several more airfields and bases are coming back to life in the Western Pacific. It's not just Tinian. Saipan will be involved, so will Guam. Disperse and harden is the key to building the infrastructure to act as a deterrence against China from moving on Taiwan and beyond, because you know they will. Tinian is American soil and part of the U.S. territory of the Northern Mariana Islands. The Tinian complex was a no-brainer when reviewing the infrastructure of the Second Island Chain. The Second Island Chain starts in Palau and then moves to Ulithi Atoll of the Federated States of Micronesia. The gathering point for the largest naval force in history, the combined American and British fleets that gathered here in 1944 and 45. And next is Guam, of course, a U.S. territory, and then Tinian and Saipan. There's Guam down here on the map, pointing it to it way right down here. And then you work your way north and you see Tinian and Saipan. You can see Saipan from Tinian. Two major islands of the U.S. territory of the Northern Mariana Islands. Now, the second island chain is going to be the pivotal location for assembling and projecting force to deter China from moving on Taiwan or the Philippines. Yeah, the Philippines wants us back. Palau is already the location of major infrastructure improvement with the establishment of an over-the-horizon radar complex that will allow a deep look into China. I worked with over-the-horizon documentation back when I was in the Air Force between 1968 and 72. Saipan is getting improvements as well as Guam. Guam's undergoing some huge improvements. But it's a large aggregation of basing activities, but possibly a dangerous over-concentration. Because, see, dispersing the basing infrastructure greatly complicates the targeting problem set of the Chinese missileers, you know, ready to rain DF-17 and DF-26 missiles onto the concentrated aircraft parking aprons of Anderson Air Force Base on Guam. We learned from Pearl Harbor never to do that again. Now, reopening the Tinian Airfield complex is a pretty important step forward in dispersing the force structure in the Second Island Chain. What's also needed is hardening. There are two components to hardening the basing infrastructure. First is missile and air defense. Second are hardened aircraft and logistics storage structures. And at the height of the Reagan buildup in the late 1980s, a massive civil engineering effort was undertaken to build pervasive and numerous hardened aircraft shelters. A dense Patriot air defense missile belt provided a pretty strong deterrence to any Soviet first strike against NATO airfields. But listen, President Reagan didn't mess around. And this hardening of the dispersed infrastructure is what's needed urgently in the Second Island Chain. The Air Force public affairs pictures of Anderson won't look so impressive after neatly lined up and exposed bombers and tankers are smoldering remains, which could happen from a Chinese missile strike. It would only take seconds. Missile and air defense are the highest priority of Admiral Aquilino, who's the Indo-Pacific commander. The admiral told Congress in April that a 360-degree integrated air and missile defense on Guam remains the highest priority. And this is also going to provide coverage to the Tinian airfield complex. Now, to accelerate this dispersion and hardening effort, the Air Force and Navy need an expansion of their civil engineering and base defense force structures. I mean, you gotta have a lot of infrastructure to accomplish all this stuff, and they can either spend years expanding this component of their service, or the Department of Defense can do something creative and innovative. Army Secretary Christine Wormuth seems intent on downsizing the size of the Army, starting with Army Special Operations. But perhaps instead, the Army Secretary can offer 2 to 4 Army Brigades of Engineers, Military Police, and Air Defenders to trade in their Army green uniforms for Air Force blue and Navy blue. I think that would be prudent. The Army needed desperate and rapid help from Air Force and Navy in the Iraq War for several years, just to maintain the land convoys moving supplies to the dispersed base camps. Not very well organized. And many airmen and sailors stepped in to make things happen and did heroic jobs. They really did. The military services should be thinking purple, and in the Western Pacific, the Air Force and Navy will be in the lead. So transferring Army units en masse makes intuitive and logical sense. Restoring the massive Tinian airfield complex to life is going to be a significant and historic job. And personally, the sentimental side of me just loves this, because it's been sad to see those four beautiful runways just overgrown with you know, just flora and fauna. See activity there again. I don't know. I'm getting a kick out of this. And engineers are going to be needed. And then the base complex will need defense capabilities to deter Chinese missile or special operations attacks. This is so interesting to me. Admiral Aquilino is making the priorities clear for the massive reopening of dispersed and hardened facilities across the second island chain, and the first and third island chains for that matter. I mean, this is all down on paper now. They're actually moving on this. And another innovative way to establish missile and air defense in the Guam, Tinian, Saipan portion of the second island chain is to renovate and tow one of the Ticonderoga-class Aegis missile-capable cruisers languishing and rusting away in shameful condition at the old Philadelphia Naval Shipyard. Tow that to Guam, Tinian, or Saipan and use that as missile-launching platforms. It's all doable. All doable, my friend. And another opportunity for the Army to support the main effort is for the Army to re-embrace its maritime heritage and then quickly build up its paltry but once mighty fleet of small support vessels to create the taxi service for rapid movement within the Pacific Island chains. Here's what I'm praying. Trump gets back into the White House in 2024. Well, he actually won't get in there until January of 25. And this is assuming that China hasn't already moved on Taiwan. And then Trump will actually embark upon. I got to watch my, you know, I get going so fast here in my brain. I just lose all sense of grammar. But my prayer is that Donald Trump, when he retakes the White House, will embark upon another military restoration program, much like the one Ronald Reagan did. We didn't have any wars during Reagan's 8 years in office, did we? There was a reason for that. Boy, do I miss Ronald Reagan. To the Comedy Corner and the return of Jeremy Alder.
Here's how Texas my parents are. For Christmas this past year, they bought each other guns. Christmas guns. I think it was a good thing. I think it's a sign that they still deeply love each other. Because I just don't think you buy your partner a gun unless you're really sure things are going to end up well. I don't want to get into the politics of guns. I think we can all agree, though, that if you do decide to introduce firearms into your relationship, you should both get one. Because a marriage where only one person has a gun is really just a hostage situation. In a true marriage, is a union between two equally armed people locked in a Cold War for all eternity. My wife and I were very old-fashioned. No guns. It's just hand-to-hand combat and the silent treatment. Actually, last time I was down in Texas, I saw a guy with a t-shirt that said, "If Jesus had a gun, he'd still be alive." I know. I was like, "Buddy, you didn't finish that story, did you?" Surprise ending. Well, how does this guy imagine it would have gone down if Jesus did have a gun? Like, they come to arrest him and take him to the cross, and he's just like, not today, Satan. You come at the King of Kings, you best not miss. Now start saying your prayers, because you're about to meet my dad.
Have a wonderful and safe New Year's weekend. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on Tuesday's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?